We've usually been talking about coronavirus and Chinese intrusions this last several days. So every day, something truly unpleasant. Today, we are still on one of those themes, China and Chinese intrusions, but maybe not on a note as unpleasant as we've seen, as we've dealt with lately. And maybe it's thanks to the weather, a beautiful monsoon afternoon and very nice breeze. So there is some bit of a cool breeze blowing right now in the Ladakh area, where India and China, both forces are now disengaging and de-escalating. There is a subtle difference between the two things, but I will talk about that. So in fact, one of the more nonsensical and unfair lines which has crept into our polarized conversations around this PP14 or Petrol Point 14 clash is that the Chinese came and killed 20 of our soldiers. It didn't happen like that. Whatever happened, irrespective of who started this, Indian Army more than got even there. This was a hard fight between two tough armies, Indian Army perhaps tougher than the other one. So once again, without feeling victimized, we have to, I'd rather say that there was a clash. This was a point at which there was a lot of tension even after that, because once lives are lost by both sides, it leaves very bad scars behind, and these were very fresh scars. So the disengagement there is now a major development, and it is welcome. So if you look at these sketches or even these satellite pictures we've been sharing with you, none of this is to scale and none of this denotes any actual line of actual control, because India and China have never delineated that. There are perceptions in terms of where one's territory is. Those perceptions are marked by what is called as patrol points. That is the point to which one side's patrols go by way of a show of flag. And if we find a patrol coming from the other side, they both do a banner drill, show each other the banner saying you're coming to our territory, and then either side then decides to go back. Now, this patrol point 14 is that point in Galwan. This is effectively in the middle of the riverbed. Galwan River is a very fast flowing summer stream. Summer stream because it basically gets its water when the snows melt. So right now it is a fast flowing river. So Petrol Point 14 notionally is in the river bed. So that is about as far as Indian patrols go. The Chinese, on the other hand, come in from their side, and some area in the middle is left as a kind of buffer zone. What the Chinese now did, they objected to Indians coming to this patrol point. They stopped Indian patrols. And they came and they pitched camp a little bit inside this patrol point, about 500 to 600 meters. That is where this clash took place. They had earlier set up tents there, which they had committed to removing. They removed them, but they brought them back. And then you know the story of how the Bihar Regiment troops went there. They had that tent uprooted because they had gone to verify. And that's when the clash took place. After that, the Chinese had pitched tent there and built defenses, so had the Indian side. And this was eyeball to eyeball, so it could have gone wrong at any point of time. So what's being done right now? You see a wrestling match or a boxing match where it gets very rough at some point. In a boxing match, when you find one grabs the other, or in a wrestling match, when you find the game is not going anywhere, then the referee comes and separates the two. Not only does the referee physically separate the two right there, but sends them back to their own corners or their own sides. That's precisely what's been done in Patrol Point 14. So the Chinese have gone back a certain distance from Patrol Point 14. India have gone back a certain distance. That distance on both sides is equal. So no side has conceded any territory to the other. But basically, it is to create a buffer between the two sides, that your army will come up to this place, say 1.5 kilometers, that side of PP14, my army will come, will stay up to this place, which is 1.5 kilometers or whatever, this side of Patrol Point 14. That is so that the two will not clash, because two fighters, as in a wrestling game, if or in a boxing game, if temperatures are really running high, if they are very close, they can come to fight again. The current understanding seems to be that for the next 30 days at least, no side, neither side will patrol this area. So this will remain a buffer zone. So again, no territory lost, no territory taken. Now, similar exercise, we are hoping, because that's the plan, will now be repeated in Hot Springs and Gogra areas, which are further to the west of PP-40. PP-14 about, say, 45, one is about 45 kilometers, one might be about 60 kilometers. So those two will now undergo the same process of disengagement. Once disengagement happens, then you will come to de-escalation. What de-escalation would mean, at least in my understanding, is that all the heavy stuff that both sides have piled in, tanks, artillery, rocket launchers, additional formations, combat reserves, those will be slowly sent back to where they usually remain in peacetime, because the buildup right now is that of a wartime, and there one thing can lead to another. So once again, this is a slow process, laborious process. Somebody in the army said an onerous task, because it means at any point of time, because suspicions running very high, you check with the other side. But that is what is happening right now. There is one area where we haven't seen that much progress yet, although we believe that talks are on, and maybe at the next round of Corps Commanders talks, which may take place in a few days from now, maybe within a week from now, more of that, we might hear more about the finger area. Now, finger area is where the Chinese have come ahead into what India thinks is their territory, but was not controlled by India. China thinks is their territory, but was not controlled by China. Both sides patrolled that territory. That is where the Chinese have to go back from, and that is now under negotiation. They have removed a few tents and a few people have moved back. This looks like a symbolic gesture, but this is not done. As we keep saying to you in these matters, unless this is done, don't consider it done. We haven't seen very much yet about Daepsang, that is the patrol point 10, 11, 12, those areas. Those are further in the north, areas abutting subsector north, as the Indian Army calls it, or the Dolatbeg Oldi area. So this is the progress right now on the Ladakh border. So we come to our second point for today. The second point is who gained what and who lost what from this, presuming that this round does come to an end, and God forbid we don't have another disruption of the kind that we had with the Galwan clash, because even before that we thought that disengagement and de-escalation had started. If that doesn't happen, you have to see what purpose each side had started with. So tactically, at the local level, India has been upgrading its infrastructure. You can see there's a new documentary that the Chinese official television network CGTN presented yesterday, where they showed a lot of videos, a lot of pictures taken from drones and with handheld cameras to show that India was building new infrastructure on the side access along the Galwan River, going into Galwan Valley up to patrol point 14 and maybe a little bit beyond. There is a picture of a helipad, for example, a temporary helipad, maybe done with a perspex or something, netting kind of thing. Now, it is true that India, after having ignored infrastructure for a long time in the mountains, having built some arterial infrastructure, is now putting in place some capillary infrastructure going from these arteries sideways, laterally. So it is possible that India, for now, at least in these areas, will not be able to build that right now. But the fact is, India does not lose territory. From the Chinese side, why did they start this? If they started this to give a message to India that they are the big bosses and India should concede, they haven't been successful. They haven't been able to take any extra territory. Now, the caveat there being what happens with the finger area going ahead. Casualties India has suffered casualties, the Chinese have suffered their casualties, their first casualties since 1979, in 41 years. The last time they suffered battle casualties was against Vietnam in 1979. So that's a big lesson for them also. The fact that the Chinese piled in such heavy forces, tanks, artillery, etc., etc., as did India, the Chinese brought in their air force, as did India, does show to the Chinese that India is willing to look them in the eye. So once again, politically, what have the Chinese achieved? I don't know. I would say, as this game goes as yet, this is more a case of both sides trading some probing punches, nothing given, nothing taken. On the other hand, if you look at it from India's point of view and see how the Chinese might have looked at this situation, India completed the road to Daulat Begh Oldi, which gave India access, ability to take heavy equipment and lots of troops at the northernmost end, right at the route of Karakoram Pass. Second, India upgraded the airbase, started landing C-130s there, which means India can transport a lot of troops, equipment and supplies there and run major operations, because facing that is a plains area, which can be where you can use tanks, and essentially that is the Aksai Chin area. And the Chinese responded to that, particularly as this coincided in a way with the abrogation of Article 370, conversion of Ladakh into a union territory, and Amit Shah's promise in parliament to go back and take back Aksai Chin. So the Chinese may have wanted to give a message. To whatever extent that matters, I think they've now displayed it quite clearly that they see any possible gains or any possible build-up by India in that region as a threat to which they will respond. So that message has been taken and read. Similarly, the message that's been delivered from India is that this is not like old times. You cannot come and mess and get away with it, nor can you salami slice, nor can you push line of actual control forward, because if you do, there will be consequences. So I would again say, early punches traded, draw so far, no points given, no points taken. Next point, Chinese have been complaining that Indian troops have been more interfering, that Indian troops have been more aggressive. That is the complaint from the Indian side also. In fact, even at the core commander's talks, the Chinese have said that you guys started this by building these helipads, roads into areas which were only foot patrolled in the past. Now, there is a thought that is being examined, and you will see a story from Snehesh Alex Philip, who covers defense for us. You will see a link of that with our description today, that India is now thinking about restoring the responsibility of patrolling in these areas to ITBP, which is Indo-Tibetan Border Police, which is a paramilitary force. Now, traditionally, these areas are patrolled by both countries' paramilitary forces. For India, ITBP, for China, by their border defense regiments, a kind of Chinese BSF. In the eastern sector, the same responsibility on the Indian side is performed by Assam Rifles, which is India's oldest paramilitary force. But in the past many years, India has been sending combined patrols of ITBP and the army. Now, the problem there is that ITBP is a border police. What happens when you go to these contested regions, when you're patrolling there and you confront patrols from the other side? A border police is trained to deal with a border situation, which is an administrative situation. An army, on the other hand, is trained to fight to protect every inch. So once you put the armies in front like that, then the possibility of confrontation becomes much greater. Second, if borders are not so clearly defined, then you can get into scraps over perceptions. And third, it simply stretches out your armies too much, because it cannot be the job of an army to defend every inch of a border everywhere. An army can take a call tactically and strategically and decide which is the best place to attack, which is the best place to defend. So there is a thought now to restore this to the ITBP. I suspect this is also coming from the Chinese side, and they are suggesting it from their own side as well, Because remember in 1962, after the Chinese declared a ceasefire and announced that they were withdrawing from all the territories they had captured, and they withdrew from everything in the eastern sector and most in the western sector, barring some, particularly on the western or essentially western side that they have kept. They said that 20 kilometer belt between the two areas should be patrolled by paramilitary forces or police forces on both sides. In fact, it's one of those, it's not really a quirk of history, that's the way we are in India, and I might write a national interest on this week, that it was on 24th of October 1962, after the war had started, that India set up or founded ITBP as a border patrolling police for the China border or the Tibet border. So it's possible that will be done if both sides agree, and if so, that will be seen as a de-escalatory thing going ahead. So I will tell you about one more controversy, and this has come up now because of a PTI story on the talks between Ajit Doval, Indian National Security Advisor, and his Chinese counterpart, that is Wang Yi. Now, what is the controversy? The controversy has been that, if Wang is the foreign minister of China, then why is the Indian foreign minister not talking? Why is Indian NSA talking? And then the PTI story complicated it because it used a line that Ajit Doval has been assigned the job of special representative for boundary talks with China because of his excellent negotiating skills. Now, this is not a reflection or compliment to anybody's negotiating skills, but just to state the facts, because that is what Cut the Clutter is all about. The SR's position in India, the special representative for boundary talks with China, that position in India is by default the national security advisor's position. The first SR for India was Brijesh Mishra, who was national security advisor, also holding concurrent charge as principal secretary to prime minister. It wasn't the foreign minister. After that, NSA's position split into two because M.K. Narayanan took over internal security, J.N. Dixit external, then J.N. Dixit unfortunately passed away. M.K. Narayanan continued as special representative for talks with China. After that, it was Shiv Shankar Menon, and now it is Ajit Doval. Similarly, the Chinese assign a person of very high seniority, usually a state counselor. A state counselor in the Chinese system is somebody above a cabinet minister, just below a vice prime minister, a vice premier there. So it was Dai Biangguo earlier, there Jiang Zhechi, and now this is Wang Yi, who is also a state counselor besides being the foreign minister. So once again, there is no controversy there. In India, the SR with China is always the NSA. And finally, I said I'll tell you five things. Finally, now, how do India and China find out whether each side is keeping its promise? What happened on 15 June happened because of lack of trust. Because this Bihar regiment officer and his troops went to check if the Chinese had really cleared their tent or not. And when they found that the Chinese has put it back there, then they responded and they uprooted it and a jhagda took place. Now, trust is now completely missing. So both sides now are verifying. So each side, each one takes a step gingerly, the other one verifies, and they verify on either side. But more than physical verification, now it's being done through UAVs, quadcopters, and also through aerial means. And then maybe there will be some, by mutual understanding, there'll be some manual or physical inspections that has to be done very carefully. So the principle that you've been hearing about very often in the last couple of days is trust but verify. And there is a history to that three-word phrase. And the history is that when Gorbachev and Ronald Reagan were having their endless talks over disarmament and over detente between the US and the Soviet bloc, when that ended, then Reagan used this expression in Russian, and Reagan said, I may not get the pronunciation right. He did not get it right, and I'm not sure I can get it right, but I will try, because this is an original Russian expression and very familiar and popular Russian expression, Dovreyai, no Pravreyai. Trust but verify. Dovreyai, no Pravreyai. Trust but verify. So Reagan said that all this is fine, but as I keep saying, trust but verify in Russian. And Gorbachev said at the same press conference, he's been saying this to me in every conversation. So that is the expression being used now. Credit the Russians with having invented it, and Ronald Reagan with having made it popular in English language. And if you just have a few more seconds, you can actually hear that brilliant conversation, historic conversation between Ronald Reagan and Gorbachev.
The importance of this treaty transcends numbers. We have listened to the wisdom of in an old Russian maxim. Though my pronunciation may give you difficulty, the maxim is Dovayai no Provayai. Trust but verify.
На каждой встрече вы это повторяете.
You repeat that at every meeting.